The views expressed on this episode of the Came to Believe Recovery podcast do not necessarily reflect those of Take 12 Recovery Radio or its affiliate. The opinions on this show should not be taken as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Recovery Radio is not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
Well, greetings, my friends. I am the Monty Man from Take 12 Recovery Radio, and this is the Came to Believe Recovery Podcast. And now, here are your podcasting broadcasters, Tom Williams and Alicia Martinez, to introduce this week's show.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Alicia Martinez with Came to Believe Recovery podcast from the West Coast, and I am joined with the East Coaster right there.
Yeah, Tom Williams out here in New York City, and what a day in New York City, Alicia. I mean, a day getting to New York City today.
All about it. He was telling me a little bit about that before we came on. And we have our producer, Monty Man, who is also on the West Coast with me. He is in Oregon, and I'm in California.
It is a beautiful day here. I am telling you, the garden fountains are flowing. The American flag on the patio is waving, and all the birds are singing on key.
Aww, that's amazing. We have a doozy of a topic today. Might be a little controversial, but that's okay. We're going to go there, talking all about higher power.
Uh-oh.
So we just want you listeners to keep an open mind and keep listening, and you might learn a thing or two. But Tom, I want to hear, how was your mindset this morning?
Well, for me, you know, I left my condo in New Jersey, and I looked at the clock, and it was 6:58. And when I sat down at the desk in New York, it was 9:18. So that's 2 hours and 18 minutes to get from home to the office.
Ouch.
And I'm telling you, I was exhausted, guys. I'm just exhausted when I'm getting ready to start the day. Just beat up. I don't know how people do it every day. I do not do this every day to make this commute. But the train was packed, and boy, was I tested for patience and tolerance, and probably need to do a step 10 tonight on some stuff, tell you the truth, because I don't
know.
I'm pretty loving and kind, and
you weren't spreading.
Say that again.
I said, were you mean to somebody that you need to think about, or just your internal no patience needs to be?
I was not the happy-go-lucky Tom on the train. I was grumpy and a little annoyed that the woman wanted to sit next to me on the train, and I had to move my bag on the ground. And I don't know that I need to make, I wouldn't know how to make direct amends to her, but I've got to do some acting. I mean, I just was not letting it look good on me today at all. I mean, I just was the grumpy guy that I usually try to cheer up when I'm on the trains today. It was a tough one. Right. And then out into Penn Station, and the taxi didn't go right, and the traffic trying to get up here, and all of that. Why do people do this? 2 hours of my day. Go on. It just doesn't seem efficient, guys. Anyway, that was the start to my day.
Yikes. But that's just an example of what happens in the real world. And then you can think about that, and maybe next time you'll know that it could happen again, and you'll bring a book, or you'll do some work on the train, or you won't take the train. You'll work from home, or, you know, sometimes we learn lessons from it, and sometimes we just don't feel it, and sometimes we do. And it's okay, right? There's grace for you.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, it's just... I don't have to go to a meeting about it tonight. I don't need a meeting. I don't need to go. My sobriety is not at stake. I didn't feel like drinking. I didn't feel like, you know, this is the beauty of of when you get a handle on the program of the founders that we teach, that you live a life that's not an option. And I have tools and a way to right myself today. But it was never ever crossed into my mind the idea that, you know, drinking or anything would be a solution stuff. And you'll hear it in meetings all the time. I had a rough day today. I had to go to a meeting. And I told you I just probably have to do a step 10 just to get myself straight. Mostly it's patience and tolerance, which I didn't have much of. And but that's how we live today, guys.
Yes. And a good thing, too, is to realize that someone that wasn't working the program wouldn't even bring that up. It wouldn't be in your head. You'd be like, that was like an everyday thing of being impatient and angry. But you realize that that's not how you wish to be, and you're sharing it out loud. That's not normal. I don't think it's normal. Mm. So I think that's a blessing. Maybe someone will hear it and go, ooh, I'm doing that too. Or, you know, it could go off in so many different directions.
I think that what we're talking about here is emotional sobriety. You know, mm-hmm. we tend to be, as human beings, we tend to be so emotionally dependent on the circumstances going on around us, going our way, that when they don't, we lose our emotional center of gravity. We fall off our beam, you know. And for many of us, when we fell off our beam, you know, we returned to what we knew. And that was to medicate, to change the way we felt. You know, today, things can irritate us. I mean, if we are applying and implementing these steps, you know, in living in the go, 10, 11, and 12, things can irritate us. Doesn't mean things aren't painful, make us sad, or we grieve and things like that. But we don't lose our emotional center.
Yeah. I was a little off last night as well and a little triggered by my husband. And sometimes I'm just all about it and loving and it's okay. But last night I just did not have it. And if he doesn't feel well, he gets angry. And I get annoyed with that because I didn't do anything. And I know we've talked about it so many times after that he wants me to go to him when he's like that. And he wants a hug. And I know this as his wife of 10 years. But last night, I did not want to be any part of that. So I gently just got up and walked away and did laundry and did my thing and felt a little bad about it. But I don't think I owe him an amends. Maybe I do. But we talked after. It was fine. But that's just like a small little thing. But it affects me. And like if people are mad or taking their thing out on me, I'm sure I'm reverting back to childhood and stuff. And then I go into my isolation and I leave and I run. So I might have to like look at that and... Sometimes I'm better at it, but last night I ran. I'm like, I don't want any part of this right now.
Yeah, you're
Monty,
human.
What about you? Do you have any juice to share with us?
Well, yeah. So I did tomorrow's Monty Mann's editorial at take12radio.com is on misunderstanding. And I found myself, and listeners will hear it tomorrow if they tune in, but I found myself in the middle of a misunderstanding, and the other person, they were definite that there was no misunderstanding here. You wronged me and da-da-da-da-da, you know, and I'm like, okay. And I think for me that the one of the big changes in my life since learning how to literally live in the go, 10 and 11 and 12, is to be able to step back from a situation like that and just kind of let the dust settle and not respond. And then if the opportunity arises for reconciliation or whatever, to be willing to do that and in a kind, loving manner. And if it doesn't, it's got to be okay. I mean... You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says we cease fighting anything or anyone, including alcohol. Wow, that's a biggie to me. You know, I'm just not interested in fighting politics or policies or arguing with people. I'm just not in. You know, I used to just love to do that. I mean, I get to boast my over-opinionated self on my other radio shows, and podcasts. But as far as like getting into it with somebody, I'm just not interested. You know what I mean? And so it's just easier for me to walk away. I don't know that walking away is always the right thing, though.
Yeah.
Well, and I was speaking with somebody last night. It's interesting you say that peace at any cost is not always the right thing.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, yeah. Making peace at any cost. I mean, there's a point where the cost to the peace or the cost of non-engaging is higher than engaging. And so how we discern that out, and that's part of intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us, right? The promises. We begin to understand where to step and where to stand. And sometimes we do have to stand up for ourselves and stand for something and stick with it. I find I do.
Yeah. Sometimes we have to say, this is not okay.
Many times now, it's not. I'm like you, Monty. Many times I just don't engage because it used to be about me and about just being right. And just, I am not interested in that generally anymore.
Right.
Which is a perfect segue, gentlemen, to what we're talking about today, because there's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of opinions about higher power and what that means and what it says in the big book and what it doesn't say. So that's our controversial, maybe to some, topic for today. So, Tom, you want to start us off?
So, yeah, guys, you know, this higher power, God, controversy, which us here at Came to Believe Recovery, and I know at Take 12 Radio, we don't have a controversy of higher power or God. I was talking to Alicia before this, and if I was to say to Alicia, you know, something about my higher power, she knows that I mean God. I mean the supernatural creative intelligence of the universe, the overwhelming God, the Father. But that term has morphed into other things today. And higher power now has taken on a title that can allow it to be anything. But anyway, let's look at what let's see where this all came from. Number one, I looked at how it works, guys. So how it works is that, you know, the two-page
big book, page 16.
Narrative on the steps in the big books, the beginning is chapter 5. And it outlines the program. Now, here's an interesting thing, and I counted them. They talk God with a capital G, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times within that context, and not once do they say higher power. So that should tell us something.
Mm-hmm.
It says there's one who has all power, and that one is God with a capital G. In step 3, we turned our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now, as we understood him in italics, we'll talk about that in a minute because that's past tense. And 5, it admitted to God. 7, we're entirely ready to have God remove. Then humbly asked him, who's him? The God of step 6. Mm-hmm. I mean, how this has gotten off the track of being a God-centered program is frustrating to all of us. But it's really important for us who know the truth about the way that it was and the way that it worked the best to keep bringing it up, guys, to bring it back and to make people realize that they can do things, they can do something if they want to. There may be other ways to recover. There may be other ways to do it. But if you're going to do the steps, you can't do it without God. You just can't. It's right here in black and white.
If you want to do it, like how the founders did it, right? But I'm sure there's people that would fight you and say, well, I'm an atheist and I got recovery. And you could say, well, how's that working for you? Or, I mean, they could be.
Well, you know, the deal of it is the rooms of recovery, whether it's NA, CA, AA, CR, whatever 12-step fellowship, pick your poison, the rooms of recovery are filled with people that are not alcoholics. They're not drug addicts. They may have abused drugs. They may have abused alcohol, but they're not, certainly what the doctor's opinion would describe as an alcoholic and or even an addict. They're not powerless. You know, if given us, and the big book says, if given a sufficient reason, they can stop. So maybe it's, well, it's time to grow up, or, you know, I don't want to lose my job. I'm almost going to lose my job. I don't want to lose the little woman. I don't want, you know, I'm alienating my family. It's time to knock this off. And then they knock it off. But they're still going to meetings. I'm glad they're going to meetings. That's great. But please don't be sponsoring my buddy over here that's a true alcoholic or a true drug addict, because you don't know what you're talking about, because you're not powerless. So if I'm not powerless, why would I seek a power? I wouldn't. So I get it. And so I get they think they have to have a power, so God's his title, but they give him another name, right? And so I think that's where a lot of that comes in, because we've opened the doors up wide, and I'm glad we have in the open meetings. But like you were saying, if it's not God, you can disagree with that, but you can't say it's not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for instance. I don't get it, you guys. I don't get, if I want to join the Boys and Girls Club down a street from the studio, they're going to have bylaws, they're going to have rules, they're going to have directives, or I want to join the soccer team, whatever, that I'm supposed to go by there. I can't go there and say, well, I want to play basketball when I sign up for the soccer team. Mm-hmm. What? This is a we program. This is a God program, capital G. Just end of story. It just is. You don't have to like it. You can disagree with us, but you can't say it doesn't say what it says, because it does say what it says. Long pause.
I know.
And the problem is, too, I guess, I don't know if I want to say this, but there's a power that we want to take, a living, breathing power, right, that they had. It says we need to have a power that solved our problems. So mm-hmm. I think that in a lot of these rooms, it's an academic endeavor, if that makes sense to you guys, where they it's part of what they do. You hear that spirit part of the program,
right?
Here, the step part of the program. And there is no part that's spiritual. It's all spiritual.
Yes.
It's a God-centered thing. And so as soon as God is any way marginalized in not the director of the entire thing, now you have something different. And the results have shown. People find it's a different animal. And so it's more than just naming him and saying, okay, let's say the God versus higher power, because I love what you said, Monty. They might say God, but he actually gets a different name or a different place in their life. And it's a place that they put it, you know, conveniently, but they haven't really turned their will in their lives. Look what it says we're supposed to do. Turn their will and our lives over to the care of God. Admit to him. Ask him to take away the natures of our wrongs. We're giving him a lot of control and power here. And who is that God that's doing that? And he's the center. What does it say in the one? The absolute certainty that God is the central figure in our life, it says, I'm paraphrasing today, that's what they said back then. With absolute certainty. They didn't say anything else. They said that there was a God. The absolute certainty that the conscious contact of God was the most important thing in their lives today. How many people would say that in the rooms? And I think, Monty, your point of, which we know is true, that half of the people in the rooms are not what the big book would call helpless and hopeless type of alcoholics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they may not be driven to this place where life is so bad that they need to really even look at their powerlessness or come to that place where they could admit it, that they were powerless. They still think they have power at some level. So then God gets a part. Now I'm just talking conjecture here. So he gets a part, this higher power. They like that because that's a piece that they can pull in. But they never really surrender. And so they never really feel all the promises. They never really feel completely free. They're dependent upon meetings and people and that kind of stuff. And it's just something totally different than what they were doing back in the 1930s and 40s.
Can you speak to the God as we understood him, past tense?
Well, I mean, that's really so confusing people, Monty. I'll say this at retreats. I say, how many people think that the big book says it's a God as you understand him and it can be your own conception? And that's the end. And
everybody raises
75% of the people will raise their hands. Alicia's there. They raise their hands.
Yeah.
I said, it doesn't say that. It doesn't. It says God as we understood him. What does that say to you? They're two separate things. So God, as we understood him, means they understood a God. That's what they did in past tense. They turned their will and their lives over the care to God as we understood him. So my sponsor said to me, we better find out who the God was that they understood. Great advice. And your own conception, which interesting, your own concept, it's conception, is something that they found that they would allow or needed to start at provided certain conditions existed. In the big book, we agnostics outlines this person who is violently anti-religious, has this terrible thing. And after they go through this list of things, they say, okay, if like you're that person, you can start with your own conception, provided it's a supernatural creative intelligence, provided it makes sense to you, and it was a start. So they meant the conception to be a start if you had to. It helped them. It even goes on in that part to say, we began, it led us to the God stood. So it references the same God that they found even in that part. So conception, if you need to, at the start, it's going to be inadequate. And so it's not going to be the answer or the solution. And once you do get to three, the God that they understood, got to find out who that was, guys. And there's tons and tons of evidence that it was the God of the Bible. Now, this is where we get into trouble, too, with this conception of the God of the Bible. Uh-oh, now it's Christian. Now you're going to hit me over the head with the Bible. Now I have to go on my knees. Now I have to pray. Now I have to, you know, light candles and walk around. I'm going to know what people associate with religious practices. But huge biases will come, and that is something we really try hard to break through when we do it, when we present these principles at retreats. It's exactly why Clarence did that first meeting in Akron, was because the Catholics were going to have trouble with this.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Let me backtrack just a little bit so that we have context. Like in the big book, page 46, yeah, it says, our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach, so you can start there, and to effect a contact with him, right, capital H. And then big book 47, it says, at the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him, past tense, is how they understood God. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach, that was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. So we say that at retreats, show them those, that that's fine if you need to start there. But then we urge them, don't stay there. You know, keep your mind open, and then they'll learn in step 11. That's going to help them not to stay there. Whether you're atheist, agnostic, in between, or you're orthodox and you have your strong beliefs, they too need to grow and pivot. And everybody can grow from where we are, right? We all need to improve our conscious contact from wherever we are.
Yeah, and
it's right there in the big book.
And you know, the phrase, as we understood him, you could even say, as we understand him, or I can personalize it, as I understand him. It's moving, it's breathing, it's you know, I'm moving toward. It's as I'm walking to the store, as I'm going to the meeting, these things that I'm learning, and it's always evolving. You know, the whole point of the step process is to move on from there. You referred to make a beginning, to make a start, and all that. And if you do a little history, if you go back into Bill's story, it's really interesting. You said it's important that we know who this God was that they understood back then. Well, he says it one time. He only says the name one time on Bill's story, but he says, to Christ, I conceded the certainty of a great man, not too closely followed by those who claimed him, his moral teachings most excellent. For myself, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. He's not complimenting himself there. He's saying that he cherry-picked what Christ taught. What he liked, and what he didn't. And he goes on later to explain that is not the way to do it. And you know, Bill got a lot of his prejudice against Christ from his grandfather, who hated religion, right? And so he had this opinion that was clouded that, you know, after his talk with Ebby, he started to get a little clearer picture. And I totally believe when Ebby said to him, you know, okay, Bill, you know, why don't you try your own conception of God? He wasn't talking about creating God out of his own understanding. He had a conception of God that he was judgmental, that he was harsh, that he was going to beat him over the head, that his conception of God, well, maybe it's that he's loving and he's kind and he shows grace and he's patient. That's what he meant by conception. He didn't mean that God changed into something else. He's talking about the personality of the Heavenly Father. That's what he's talking about.
Right.
But if you don't know, people aren't showing you this stuff, then you're going to sit in meetings, drink bad coffee, and whine about your day. Sorry, I get on my...
and make up their own conception of whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
And people hear that you can make the meeting your higher power, or you can make an inanimate object your higher power. How is an inanimate object going to help you when you're sad and depressed and suffering? It's not going to do anything for you.
Again, I suppose anything is better than you to make a beginning. But you know what I found? When I did that, when I created God out of my own understanding, I'm leaning on my own intellect again. I'm back to me being God.
Yep.
Now I'm the creator.
And that was our main problem as an addict, is that we were making ourselves God, and we were over-selfish and not thinking of anyone else. And trying to control and manage.
Step three said we had to quit playing God. It was so clear to me that it's a God necessary thing, and that I wanted this God. You know, I wanted a power. I wanted to feel the peace and serenity, and I wanted the promises. I meet so many people, as in New York City, that are just not connected. And they're not trying to be connected, and they're not being, like you said, Monty, being taught. Nobody's telling them this stuff. Nobody's telling them that you can't change who God's nature is. You if you want to start by just making your approach slower, I guess, than others, and maybe that what it means is, I don't want to go to church right away. Do I have to go and follow some rules right away? We'd say probably no if that's where you are. But do you have to reach out? Do you have to let him touch you? And I love how you say, Monty, it says God could and would, not if he were sought.
Right.
So God could and would. So he would restore us. Because if he were sought, could be misconstrued as having to do more work than, like, he's out there waiting. He takes a step toward us before we take a step toward him, I believe. I believe he's always there. Yeah. As soon as we open up, he'll show himself.
Yeah, that's biblical.
So he important.
Us. We don't reach for him. He does it. He does the work.
No one comes to the Father, but he draws them. He does that.
Mm-hmm. It said in the ABCs that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, but that God could and would. Why couldn't it just stop right there?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to.
It almost opens the door that you could do something else.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, stuff got padded, right? Well, we want to take it easy on the newcomer. You know, we want to. Yeah. Well, just because Bill would say something and somebody else. Yeah. Well, Bill, you may want to. You know. Okay. You know. So we'll reword that a little bit. And then there was other places where Bill would go to Bob and say, hey, Bob, what do you think about such and such? And Bob would just say, yeah, whatever, Bill, you got it. Go for it. So
people are people-y.
People right? are people-y. I love that.
That's not God. That's people.
Right.
That's another point that we talk about. If you were hurt by people in the church, it's and we're blaming God, we need to look at that. These are people. We are people. And we're going to mess things up, and we need to search to see if we're going to really give our life and our thoughts and our behaviors to God. Who is this God? And I'm not going to learn about who God is by a tree, by myself, my personal story.
Right.
I go to church and I go into Bible studies and I'm reading the Bible because I want to know who this God is. And if you're by yourself all the time and not in community of believers, I don't believe you're going to figure out who he is. Personally, you're going to make up stuff again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's important for, that's one of the reasons that we gather in our 12-step fellowships. It's important that we have fellowship with one another. You know, mm-hmm. Thank goodness for the meetings. It's as my mentor says all the time, it gave me a chance to take some time to find the program, but it's not the program. You know, and it's not God.
Right.
It's now, is a group of people a power greater than me? Yes, but it's not God. It's a higher it's a higher power in the sense that it's got more power than me by myself, but it's not God. You know, the ocean is powerful, but it's not God. You know, people say, oh, electricity, you know, you're right, but it's not God. Mm-hmm. So if I want to start with an electrical outlet, okay, if that makes sense to you, but it's not God. So work the steps, and you'll move on from there. You will. You just will. It takes on an organic a journey for you if you will do it. But so often people just stop. You know, we lose people in 4, and we lose people in 9. That's been my experience.
Yes. Yes, yes. 9 was my scary one.
And I think... you know, Monty, you made a good point, because we can be criticized, or I have been in the past, that we bash meetings a lot. And we do say that the program isn't meetings, it's the program, and there isn't even instructions on a meeting in the big book. But you make a great point that meetings and fellowship provide a place for people to come and meet us. And some people need a little time to be around us and listen to the talk to be ready. And if that's the case, the meetings are serving a great purpose. And if someone has to come for a few weeks or months and then decide, yeah, you know what? I am one of you guys and I need this. But then we got to be ready to take them through the program and the steps. And that's a missing piece, I think, in many of the programs, is that they don't have that piece ready. When someone says they're really ready, nothing is done. Or not that. You know, not the step, or they start the 1 step a month process. Yes. So there's certainly value in it, the meetings. But we've got to get back to step focused once someone's ready. There's the only answer the AA ever had was working through the steps. And the steps got their power from God. And it was the God of the Bible who touched their hearts and filled them with power and allowed them to be free.
And I think that there was more, back then, there was more emphasis on developing a relationship with God than there was meetings. Just like there's in within the church, there was more emphasis on walking with the Lord than there was going to church. We've got it backwards. You know, it's like I have,
right.
I can't wait till Sunday. I'm so nervous. I got to have Sunday. But it's the same thing. Well, I got to get to the meeting. Well, then you're church dependent, or you're meeting dependent, or you're step dependent, but you're not God dependent.
Right. And what are you doing on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? If it's not Sunday, what are you doing?
Yeah.
How are you feeling? You can stay connected. We need to stay connected all week, all day long. But let's touch on like the really controversial stuff of how we arrive at the God of the Bible from the big book. Because there's many references in there. Like Monty, you were saying Christ. And then there's where Bill Wilson says, the Lord has been so to me, curing me of this terrible disease. And in the older edition, right, is where Jesus and the Gethsemane is referenced, but they took that out, right, Tom?
They took that out, yeah. Page 216, 217, Algie's story, right. Which clearly states, you know, Bill pointed to Gethsemane as that was the power. Mm-hmm. Dr. Bob, right, from Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, was convinced that the answer to the problems was in the good book. This is all just historical facts. These are things that were said. These are evidence of what was actually being done. I know it pisses some people off. I've heard people say to me then, Monty, and have you ever heard this? Well, it's interesting your way of doing it. And yeah, like, I'm always like, our way of doing it, like the way, there are versions.
Way they did it. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. The truth is the truth. There are not different versions of the truth. They're just not.
Right.
You have your truth and I have my truth, you know, right? The truth is the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so if I go out and slash your tire, don't get mad at me. It's my reality, man. It's my truth.
Right. So Dr. Bob, the guy who was considered the co-founder of this program, says that the absolute essential parts were the Sermon on the Mount, the 13th chapter, 1 Corinthians, and the book of James.
Yes.
It doesn't get any clearer than that.
Yes.
It was out of the Bible. That's where the power, that's where their principles came from. That's where this whole thing came from. It's not, in my book, up for debate. It shouldn't be up for debate. This is what they did, and this was where it all came from. Now, whether you like it or not, that's a different story. And whether you want to do it or not, that's a choice.
Exactly.
But to come into AA and say there's a different version, I'm going to change it, it's just like I say at retreats. It's like baseball. If you want to play baseball, well, I was telling Alicia, if you go to a baseball game and say, we're going to play baseball in the parking lot, well, you're not going to win a game. You're not going to score any runs. You're not going to get the benefit of it, the fun of it, all the, because you're not actually playing. And that's what some AA meetings are. They sit in, it's like sitting in the parking lot.
Mm.
And other ones want to play baseball without bases, or they want to play with a football, or they want to play without a bat, and they want to change it around. And then they also wonder why they're not having the success that they're having. But I always say this. Read the promises in step 9 and 10. We say this at retreats. Is that not the life you wanted? Read this. How would you not want this if this was the definition of your life? 9th step and 10th step promises. What's the big protest, right? Baffling to me. And some do, Monty and Alicia. They just do.
I know.
It's like, you don't want that? Well, no. It's really, really just baffling.
In step 2, right, where the dilemma, the crossroads of, do you want to die an alcoholic death or do you want a spiritual life? The addict is like, I think I want the alcoholic death. And it's ridiculous, right? But we've all been there.
Yeah.
And we're still doing it to a certain extent. That's why we have to continue to grow in our walk with God.
Yeah.
And I love the part where, because I didn't know when I went to AA that first things first came from here. It says, Clarence asked Dr. Bob, what's all this first things first? And Dr. Bob would be ready with the appropriate quotation, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And I bet more than half of the people in their rooms do not know that that is a Bible verse. and they're spouting out first things first.
Yeah, they think
they don't even know what it means.
They think it came from Al-Anon. No, it came from Scripture. Listen, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm more with Tom and Alicia. Don't go away. Hey, come on and have some fun with me. I'm the Monty Man, and I am the co-host of Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a workshop that we are currently broadcasting here at Take 12 Recovery Radio, which includes AA co-founder Bill W.'s writings in the grapevine from 1944 to 1970. Walking Through the Language of the Heart with myself and Chris S., is broadcasting and posted every Friday until we're completely done with this wonderful book. Simply visit us at take12radio.com, click on the Recovery Workshops banner, and there you'll find Walking Through the Language of the Heart, as well as other recovery workshops that we've produced here for you for free at Take 12 Recovery Radio. Visit us once again, take12radio.com, scroll down to the Recovery Workshops banner, click it, and you'll be well on your way.
This is Tom Williams
and Alicia Martinez, and we'd like to invite you to join us every Tuesday right here at take12radio.com for the Came to Believe Recovery podcast.
Topics will include a deep look into the how and why the 12-step movement was so successful in the past and how it can experience that success again today.
You can catch up on all our episodes at take12radio.com by clicking on the Came to Believe Recovery podcast banner.
You've tuned into the Came to Believe Recovery podcast right here at Take 12 Recovery Radio. Now, back to our show.
We're talking with Tom Williams and Alicia Martinez from Came to Believe Recovery. Please visit their website at cametobelieverecovery.org. And the topic this week, let's talk higher power. And we certainly have been talking about God. We have made the statement that there are a lot of powers greater than ourselves. A group of people in a room, two or more people together, certainly the ocean, but it is not God. And the folks, the founders of the 12-step fellowship and the whole 12-step movement were dependent, had learned how to be God dependent, not people dependent. And in fact, in the chapter Working with Others, it says, remind the prospect, that's the new guy or gal, that his recovery is not dependent upon people, but on his relationship with God, capital G.
Yes. So meeting people where they are, I think we should touch on that. Because at retreats or meetings or wherever we are, we do obviously come up with to people that are all over the spectrum of belief. So we need to be ready to meet them where they are. So, like, Monty, how do you, if someone asks you to sponsor them and they're not quite where you are, do you take them on anyways or
yes.
What do you think?
Yes. Yes.
And you just encourage them to continue to grow in step 11?
Yep. Well, what I do is, first of all, there's three kinds. There's people that do claim Jesus as their God and the God of the Bible, and there's them. There's people that aren't sure. Maybe they're agnostic. It simply means no knowledge. They just don't have the knowledge and they're not sure. But they're open to suggestion, you know. And then there's people that are dogmatically, you know, one guy claimed to be a Buddhist. He discovered later he didn't know anything about Buddhism. But I told him, I said, okay, I will sponsor you. And so when we got to step 2 and 3, I just simply said, look, here's the deal. If you're going to claim, you know, the philosophy of Buddhism as a power greater than yourself, and you're going to turn your entire will and life over to that, I expect you to know everything and anything about that you possibly can. You are to dig into that. You are to investigate it. You are to know it. Because if you're going to give your life to it, you'd better know it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 3 weeks later, he came back to me and said, I'm finding that lacking. Can you tell me more about the God of the Bible? Mm-hmm. Now, if I had turned him away, I'd have lost an opportunity. So I think this is where we stay Christ-like. We stay, when Jesus said, when he told the apostles, come on, come with me, let's go, the train's leaving. He didn't say, do it perfectly. He just said, follow. He didn't say you won't be stumbling around in the dark. You will be, but, come on, you hear my voice. And I think when we allow people the grace to kind of let this thing happen organically and we continue to be Jesus with skin on, it's going to happen. At the very least, they're going to come to a crossroads where they're going to have to make a decision, I'll sponsor somebody that's not a believer. You bet.
Yeah. I know, Tom, you've had a lot more experience at retreats and people, and I remember you telling me a story, which I would have been mortified by, but the people actually were talking back to you, right? And they actually, didn't they walk away and leave? I think you froze.
Say that again.
Didn't you have
I heard part of it.
A retreat where some ladies were fighting you on this fact of your own conception, and they left the retreat?
Oh, right. Yeah, I was teaching the steps out in Long Island to a group of people that was one of our leaders, Marty Kay, and I got to this conception thing, and I said, this is not your own conception. It's the, and I went through this, dialogue about that the conception was still a supernatural power, creative intelligence of the universe, and that you couldn't use your own concept as the end. It's not what they did. And she said, yes, it was. She yelled at me, book. I said, no, it's in the book. She goes, it's not in the book. And then I read the book. I said, at the start, to make our conscious contact with him. I said, it's right here. It says it right in the book. I didn't make it up. They moved, and she got up and walked out. She was so annoyed. Two of them got up and walked out.
Wow, yeah. So some people just do not want to keep an open mind, even when you show them in the big book, right? That's why I think we need to meet that they are and have grace, and maybe that was a seed, and maybe she'll come back later and hopefully and go home and read that part maybe, but all we can do is present them with the information, the truth of what we know that's in the big book, and the truth that the founders did this right. And also too, go ahead,
Tom, what were you gonna say?
It comes back, I think, to there's more behind this than just the program. They've made a decision, or they've made taken a position about God in their life from whatever they've ever done. And they've decided that there is no God, or the God can't have any power, and their God is not a factor. And then they come in and they're faced with this program that says he has to be. And this is this time where they just have made this decision that God, no matter what, I'll do things, but God is not something I believe in or can ever have a power. And we present them with this roadblock, apparently, to them, that you have to come to the realization that there is a God. We're letting you start with your own conception, still supernatural creative intelligence, and not really telling you you have to do anything particular except for follow these principles, which anybody could do. And they just can't get their head around it. Yeah, you're right, Alicia. I hope that maybe it got them thinking and later saying, where did all that big talk ever get me? Mm-hmm. I just don't know. I'd love to follow up someday to find out whatever happened with those that left. And it's one of the things we try so hard to do at retreats, right, Alicia, is to let people work through the bias. Monty, people come in with all sorts of brokenness and pain and confusion about that, and then religion all mixed up in spirituality and God, and they have him titled a way, and they've been trained their whole lives to think a certain thing, and they've had all sorts of experiences that they attribute to God or not God. And then we're coming in, and we got to try to work. People have a lot to work through, especially these addicts that come in. The brokenness is profound. And it's been one of our, what you would call our secret sauce, is we get people to wipe that slate clean, or at least put it aside for a moment and get to a place where you say, what if? And let's try to make a connection outside of all that stuff that you hasn't done you any good. And we see a lot of breakthrough, and then we bring them along. And this is the meeting them where they're at. We let them start there. And it's some wonderful stuff when we see some transformations that you just can't believe, right, Alicia?
Yes.
I have a question for you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard it said over the years by some great folks in the meetings. Things like, well, if I had seen God on the wall, I wouldn't have stayed. And yet God was on the wall and they stayed. You know, right. if I thought I was joining a religious order, I wouldn't have stayed. If I thought there was so much God talk, I wouldn't have stayed, and so forth. But you know what? I've also met people that have said, and I was one of these people, when I got here, I was so grateful that God was in those steps. I was so grateful that Bill talked about Christ. I was so grateful to hear that we were talking about the creator of the universe. If I had heard anything else, I would have left. What about those folks? You know, we hear people say, you know, I mean, I like the fact that people are human and they can use profanity in the meeting and nobody corrects them. Well, you know what? I don't want to hear it. We don't talk about the folks who don't want to hear it, you know, and that's a whole nother show. But what I'm saying is, right, there's this group of people that's always left out. We assume that it's always the dregs of society that come in here and they're anti-God and we got to be sensitive to them, and they're anti-religion and they're anti-spirituality and they don't want to talk about prayer and all. The truth is, I think most people deep down want to. I think we're mistaken. I think they want to talk about that stuff.
I love it, Monty. I think so too. It was a freedom to me to know it was God. I just had to get the coaching into having a relationship and getting him alive in me. But I liked the God part when I came in. I surrendered to it quickly.
Mm. But then we have those people too at retreats. I've seen a couple that are so God and dogmatic
yeah,
and their things that they get in their own way and they're upset because we're right, not worshiping and saying hallelujah Jesus in step one. We wait till step two and a half and they're mad at us for that. And they're, it's the same stuff, just on different sides of the spectrum. And we're trying to meet them and show them it's God. But yeah, some of them get really, really upset with how we're teaching it and how we're presenting it. And you have to say Jesus. And like, we will. But if we do that now, they might yeah, run away. So give us some slack, right? And pastors, they're really hard to communicate about all this stuff.
When people start talking like that, I think to myself, oh boy, because I know what's coming. And I feel for them. I feel for the room. I just like, oh, this is not going to be good.
Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, we believe in the same God as them, but they just don't see it. They're not keeping their minds open and they're not seeing that they can be doing damage to these people and they're shutting the door. Yeah. So I think we hit all of it, didn't we? Is there anything else that we need to cover?
Tom?
Well, I just, you know, just make that last, not plea out to everybody listening, but, you know, we'd love to hear your comments. If you want to write in, Came to Believe Recovery Podcast, and we'd love to talk to you if you have a big problem with it or a big point of view. And maybe we, you know, we're going to have some guests on here as time goes on. We want to hear what you have to say. We want to hear your experience with all this. You know, we really do. But we do want to come through and clearly state what the facts were. And we're just going around the country doing this. And the God's all over this program. He was the God of the Bible. And it worked. It does not mean you have to do anything particular at any church, guys. And come to see us. And it also doesn't mean you have to quit your church. That's another really good point, Monty and Alicia, that people think they're going to have to give up the religious or belief system they had or their method of worship. And that's not necessarily true, that they have to stop what they were doing. We need to make that really clear, too. You're Catholic, a Presbyterian, Protestant, Methodist. If you get connected and these steps work and you follow and go and worship in that venue and that's where God leads you, good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it can just strengthen their belief and things if they have they're coming from both sides. I believe they can go even deeper and help other addicts that are in the church that won't admit it because they're in the church and they can't say anything about it.
That's true.
And if they were actually reading the Bible, then they would be doing step three, and maybe they're missing some things that we can help them on this. So both sides can help each other. Right?
Yeah, there's even references.
Doing the steps. They believe in God, but they're still addicted.
Yeah.
So what's up with that?
There's reference in the big book that some even return to the faith of their youth. You know, I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you bet. Well, you guys, next week, the topic is going to be, we wish everyone would do the steps.
Yes. I wish everybody, even non-addicts, would do this stuff.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah, can you believe, wouldn't it be great if you went up to the White House and knocked on the door and they said, excuse me, you can't come in right now. We're having a step meeting. Oh. All right. Well, our closing song this week is by Gracie Vandiver, and it is very appropriately titled A Trail of Light. Tom, thank you. Alicia, thank you so much for another episode of the Came to Believe Recovery podcast. Here's Trail of Light with Gracie.
Some days are really hard. One day at a time seems way too long. When I can't see God's hand at work, and I forget my own self-worth, and I don't feel like I belong, that's when I need some extra comfort from someone who has walked in my shoes, reminding me though it hurts, it doesn't last. They take me by my hand and pull me through. When you don't know where to turn and you think you're alone, when it feels like your darkest night, remember that there's always someone who's been there before you. Look for the trail. I'll be your beacon in the darkness, 'cause I have known what hope and faith can bring. I'll light the way for you to see, like others did in front of me. Together we can walk through anything. When you don't know where to turn and you think you're alone, when it feels like your darkest night, remember that there's always someone who's been there before you. Look for the trail of light. And although it may shine a light for someone else to see. When you don't know where to turn and you think you're alone, when it feels like your darkest night, remember that there's always someone who's been there before you. Look for the trail of light. Yeah, just look for the trail of light.
Trail of Light by Gracie Vandiver. Wow. Hey, listen, this could be a controversial topic, higher power in many circles. It need not be, though. Listen, if you're like me and your own intellect got you into trouble, you may want to consider a power greater than yourself. Now, listen, he loves you, he cares for you, and he likes you. It's something to think about. Came to Believe Recovery strives to create and promote opportunities for life-changing spiritual experiences for individuals and families suffering from all forms of addiction. For more information, help, and support, visit cametobelieverecovery.org. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to be your host on this episode of the Came to Believe Recovery podcast. And I would encourage you to like, bookmark, and subscribe to this show. When you do, you will join the Take 12 Recovery Radio family and will be notified of all of our recovery-focused shows throughout the week. Until our next broadcast, when we provide the essential spiritual tools needed to thrive by sharing our experience, our strength, and our hope through our stories of how we came to believe.
This has been a production of Take 12 Recovery Radio.
Yeah, kitty, kitty, kitty. Meow.
Woof, woof.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.